We've been sold the idea that financial independence is all about some number on your account statement. Or even worse, that you don't qualify because of where you started out. That's just not true. It's not about some well-kept secret of the wealthy. It's about finding the right information and knowing how to apply it. On the Get Ready for the Future show, we're answering your questions so you can start making real financial change today. The journey to true financial independence begins right here, and it starts with you.
It's the post-eclipse version of the Get Ready for the Future show. We welcome you into another edition. My name is Scott Inman. Along with me today is Janet Walker as we get ready to help you protect, discover, and share true financial independence, answering your questions as we do each and every week. And we are glad to have you along, whether you're listening on radio, podcast, or if you're watching on our live stream, which is happening on a Wednesday, 2 days after the big eclipse. Janet and I both got a chance to check it out, and we were very blessed here in Central Arkansas with clear skies to be able to do that. And I'm gonna go ahead and say I wouldn't say that I was disinterested by any means. I was interested. I don't think I was as ramped up as a lot of people were about it, but it was cool. It was definitely cool.
I mean, I wouldn't have traveled halfway across the country ahead of time, but I will also say that I sat there and was just like, what a mighty God we serve. Yeah. You know, it was really just one of those cool, for me, spiritual moments even to just sit there and look at it in awe.
Really cool day. Yeah. Really cool day. We didn't get too much traffic jam here in Central Arkansas, as expected. I know that was the predictions. We know a lot of people were here. We hope our guests had a great time in Central Arkansas. We hope you got a chance to check out the solar eclipse. If you didn't, only 20 more years until you get a chance to do it again. I found myself going, I hope I can see the next time this thing comes around. And I'll be in my 70s by then. Hey, as we dive in today with the question and answers on the show, I'd like to drop this stat right off the bat. We've got a question a little bit later about someone asking us what questions they should ask as they interview a financial advisor. They're thinking about working with one. And it is a rather odd occurrence for someone who is this person's age, I think they're in their 40s, to actually do that. We looked up the stats. In 2022, only 35% of Americans worked with a financial advisor, and the average age was over 57 years old. And people 50 and over actually made up three quarters of advisory clients. So we do know that for younger people, it is uncommon for people to work with a financial advisor, but across the board, Janet, that number really sticks out as a problem. You know, when you think about where Americans go for advice in so many other walks of life and areas of their life to get help, they are underutilizing the financial services industry.
I think there's a mindset a lot of times, Scott, about like financial advisors are for people who have money, you know, and here's the deal. Money passes through your hands, or it at least passes through your accounts anyway. You may not touch it that much anymore, but it's passing through your possession. And if that is the case, then you're at a point where you need a financial advisor, and you may not need very much from them early on, but there's a lot of coaching that can happen when you're a young person getting started with your finances that can prepare you for later so you can avoid those missteps. My great niece, Scott, just got her very first job, and she was so excited to tell me about it on Sunday. And I said, that's so awesome. I'm so proud of you. When are you meeting with your Aunt Janet to talk about money, you know, before you get that first paycheck?
Yes.
So it really cannot be too early. And I'll just give a little bit of a precursor. Later this year, we're going to have a whole lot of information for you about young people getting started and some opportunities that we'll share later on.
Sounds good. That's what we call a tease on the show. Let's dive into the questions now. Sylvia from Fayetteville's first up. When should I claim Social Security? My husband thinks we should claim as early as possible, but I've listened to your show for a while, and I'm worried that may not be the best strategy. He's 60. I'm 58, so we're getting closer to this decision and retirement in general. We're both planning to retire in 5 years. Thanks for the question, Sylvia. The first part that stands out for me is if your husband thinks you should claim it as early as possible, I would ask, why does he think that? And I'm going to assume that he's probably heard some things about the solvency of Social Security. That's a good bet, Janet, because we get that question a lot from clients in a meeting room.
We do. And, you know, the example that we just kind of go through to help people understand this is when you talk about Social Security going quote unquote bankrupt, it's very different than an individual going bankrupt. So an individual going bankrupt, there's no more cash flow. They're done, okay, financially. But with Social Security, what happens is maybe you are a retiree and you're collecting a Social Security benefit, but guess what? Scott and I are still working and we're still paying into the system. And so if a $2,000 check gets reduced to a $1,500 check, yeah, it's a reduction and nobody wants to see that. But it's not an elimination of the benefit. It is simply a reduction. But at the end of the day, Scott, we don't really think that that is ultimately even going to happen, because right. what we've always said is that politicians want nothing more than to get reelected. And so we believe that, you know, given time, they're going to wait till the last minute to do it. But we believe that they will resolve the Social Security challenges. And they've done it in the past. You know, our full retirement age used to be 65 for everybody. That has inched up now to 67. And so we know that there are things that they have done in the past to salvage the program, and we believe they'll continue to do that.
Yeah. The projected date of running out in the trust fund is currently 2034. The Social Security Administration releases that trust fund report every April, so there's a new one coming, but it doesn't usually move a year or two in either direction. But we are in to that last decade, but to Janet's point, something will get done. The problem is right now is every time there's a proposal, it gets politicized mm-hmm. and vilified by the other party. But slight changes can make a difference to keep this thing running just like it is for another 50, 60, 70 years. Things like increasing your taxes, increasing that retirement age. So don't let that be a determiner on when you personally choose to claim your benefits. So let's roll through this now for Sylvia. If you're planning to retire in 5 years, which is what Sylvia says, and they're 60 and 58, so we're looking at age 65 and 63, if you're going to continue to work past age 62, that's a red flag first. You probably are not going to want to do that. 62 is the earliest that you can claim your benefits. So if Sylvia's husband is thinking about claiming at 62 and he's going to work until he is 65, that's problematic for this reason, because there is a limit on income that you can make if you claim your benefit early. And if you exceed that limit, you are penalized. And here's the most recent numbers would be 2024. The limit is $22,320. If you make more than that in 2024 and you are claiming your benefit early, the Social Security Administration will withhold $1 of benefit for every $2 over the limit. So that can be costly, and that has to be weighing in on your decision. Now, in terms of where your benefit lands, we've got a graphic for our video audience to kind of show you the difference. So this is a hypothetical $1,000 full retirement benefit. And we know we work with most of our clients have benefits larger than $1,000. But for easy math, we're going to choose $1,000. If someone's full retirement age is 67 and their benefit is projected to be $1,000, you can see on that, Janet, the screen, the differences that it can make one way or the other by claiming early or delaying.
And then, Scott, the cost of living adjustments that people get once they have claimed, like when you're looking at this, if you claim at 62 and you're getting $700, your cost of living adjustment is based on $700 as opposed to $1,000 or $1,240. But here's the, I think, Sylvia, the most important point that we would make, and that is that this is not a decision to be made in a vacuum. It is very relative to your overall retirement income plan. And the other thing I would say on that is that you and your husband, you will get individual statements from Social Security, and it will look like it is an individual decision. Mm-hmm. And we don't really believe that it should be. This is about the household income, and it is part of the household retirement income plan. There are so many different ways to claim Social Security, and basically all you get on the statement from the Social Security Administration is your earliest amount that you could claim, or your full retirement age, or delaying it to age 70, and it doesn't even begin the conversation about spousal benefits and how you can play off of each other's benefits through the years. There's lots of opportunity there to look at this in different ways. So we believe it's very important to take the time to sit down with an advisor and put together a written plan on paper on purpose to know what's going to be the best strategy for you. And Scott, I'll say on that too, that, you know, we'll put a plan together at ages 58 and 60 with the thought that, okay, they're going to retire. Like right now, they're saying they're going to retire in 5 years. So we build the plan based on that. Well, maybe something changes though. Right. Maybe they decide, you know what? I don't even know what I would do if I quit working. So I'm going to keep working. Or maybe their health forces one of them or both of them to retire it at, you know, 3 years down the road instead of five. We can flex that, but at least knowing going in, you know, do we need to claim one or both of these checks? Could we claim one and delay the other to allow it to build up? There's so many variables there to consider.
Yeah, and we're going to dive a little more into the planning process when it comes to retirement income with our next question. So let's dive in. Margaret from Little Rock says, I'm thinking about retiring next year. What do I need to be sure to do before I leave work? And this seems to be a question that's focused on what I need to do from a job perspective. And we're going to get to that. But the first thing, Margaret, that I would say, if you're thinking about retiring next year, number one is figure out how you're going to replace your paycheck. Because retirement, as we say all the time on the Get Ready for the Future show, is an income problem, not an asset problem. Now, assets are used as income, but you have to plan to determine how you're going to replace your paycheck and how much of it needs to be replaced. If you don't have a plan, get one. That's our number one thing to say. And the plan should be more dynamic than a simple withdrawal strategy. That's difficult to say. Withdrawal strategy.
Good job.
In other words, we don't want to just have a simple percentage
right.
that you're going to take out annually from your assets and not get into the specific investment strategy of where those withdrawals need to come from. And it starts, Janet, with really determining income needs and income desires.
Yeah, and when you talk about not having just a set percentage, Scott, that is so important because the market is going to do, and I say the market very generically, I'm not talking about anything particular, your investments, they're going to fluctuate. There's going to be some up and some down years, and what you don't know is the type of year that you're retiring into. And if you have a downturn early in retirement and you're withdrawing from that pool of investments, that's very problematic. In fact, we have seen study after study where it will cause people to run out of money. So the plan for your retirement income has to be built in such a way that you're taking distributions from your assets where it does not matter whether you have a positive or a negative year early in your retirement.
So the first step in making your retirement income plan is laying the foundation, and that is your required income. What monthly amount of income are you going to need just to pay the bills in retirement? Certainly, your paycheck is probably broken into required and desired income, but we build it in stages, and that required income needs to be met or needs to be paid with guaranteed predictable monthly income, and that's where Social Security comes in. Is Social Security going to be enough? Is there a pension for you when you leave work? And the decisions of what options you have, how to take your benefit are important there as well. But when we build in that guaranteed income, if it's not enough, if you have a required income gap between your monthly expenses and your guaranteed sources of monthly income, then you need to use a piece of your assets to basically add to that, right? Use a product like an annuity that will add lifetime income just enough so that you know your basic lifestyle will be complete on a guaranteed basis. And then the next step, to Janet's point on making withdrawals from the investments, that is to supply your desired income. What do you want to do? And that's a very different number for each of our clients when we put that retirement income plan together. But determining that can be done one of a couple of ways. You can put that input into your advisor. And at GenWealth, we take it that way as well. But we often sometimes say, here's what you have saved. Here's what you're projected to have at your retirement date. And here's what you can safely withdraw on a monthly basis.
Yeah, this is what your portfolio is capable of providing to you. Margaret, I would give you a few other things to just think about in this final year of retirement. Another question is whether or not you have a pension. And if so, what those payout options look like. So again, if you're married, just to be able to think through, is there going to be a need for a survivor benefit if you were to go first? So that's very important. and also the timing of your retirement relative to your particular employer. We've seen cases where if I retire before December 31st, then I don't get this bonus in the following spring. But if I'm there on January 1st, then I get the bonus in April that everybody else gets, even though I'm retired at that point. So things like that, if there's anything that is very important to the timing of your retirement relative to your employer, that's important to consider. Whether or not you have any company stock, and if you have a deferred comp plan, to think about what those options are and how you receive those funds ultimately as well.
Yeah, and the other big one here is taxes. Knowing how your retirement income is going to be taxed, and that is determined by the types of accounts that you have from an investment perspective. Most of our clients are going to have most of their income received through qualified accounts, whether it's the 401k, whether it's an IRA, could be a Roth IRA. Knowing how those accounts are taxed, because ultimately when we talk about replacing a paycheck, it matters, only the net income matters, right, to you. It's the spendable money, and determining how much you're going to actually have to withdraw from your investments to net that is very important, because it matters in your pre-retirement years. It certainly matters in your retirement years. And Social Security, knowing how it is taxed is a big deal too. It is, the benefit is not fully taxed at the federal level, and it is, in Arkansas, it is not taxed at the state level at all. So understanding what you're actually going to have in spendable income through a tax planning piece is very important as well. So Margaret, lots to talk about. I would encourage you and anybody else who is retiring next year, this year, 5 years, 10 years, to get that written plan down. It's what we do every day for our clients here at Gen Wealth. We call it the Gen Wealth Ready to Retire process. If you'd like to walk through it, the first step is to reach out to us and schedule an appointment. And you can do that in a couple of ways. You can send us an email to show@getreadyforthefuture.com, or you can pick up the phone right now and call 866-653-PLAN. That's 866-653-7526 to schedule your first appointment with a Gen Wealth financial advisor. Costs you nothing to come in. We put together a list of items for you to bring. It's a rather exhaustive list. You don't have to bring everything, but we want to be as comprehensive as we possibly can. We'll spend a couple of hours together in a meeting room and determine if we're a good fit, determine if you'd like to move forward. There's really not a downside to stepping in and just having a conversation. Again, 866-653-PLAN. 866-653-7526. Retirement is too important not to have a plan for it. This is our question of the week, so we want to say congratulations to Margaret. If you will send us an email to claim your Get Ready for the Future Show Tumblr, we're going to send it to you, but we have to know where to send it. Send us an email, show@getreadyforthefuture.com. And if you have questions for our show, please get them in to us. You can call or text them to us at 501-381-5228. Or you can send us an email to that same address, show@getreadyforthefuture.com. Next up on the show, it's Michael from Valonia. I'm 46 and looking to meet with a financial advisor soon. What are some questions I should ask and things I should watch out for? Great question, Michael. And I'm glad you're asking us, because yeah, this is a great, we could go a long ways on this question, but we've chosen to choose four big questions, Janet, to ask when you're getting ready to meet with a financial advisor.
And the first thing I'll say, Michael, is that you're very wise to start thinking about this and thinking about the questions. There is a vast difference from one financial advisor to another. And so you really do want to be sure that you know what you're looking for. So one of the first things that we would encourage you to ask is about what services that they offer. For example, are they going to be financial planners, as we are here at Gen Wealth, where we're putting together a financial plan for people to help them achieve their goals, and we're handling the investments that are necessary to implement that plan, whereas many advisors are just going to handle the investment side of things. And you've got to decide, is it important to you for those investments to be based on a plan, or do you just want a pool of investments? So that's one of the things that we would encourage you to think about. And then just kind of some sub points to that. Are they focused on retirement income? Are they going to talk with you about taxes? And like Scott, on that, we don't do tax prep.
Right.
That's a different side of it. But we definitely look at the tax impact as far as your retirement planning and taking income from one source over another at various times. So that's important as well. And then are they going to address Social Security planning? We talked earlier in the show on another question about the importance of having a plan for Social Security. It's not just, here are my three individual choices. It's very important to look at that very holistically in terms of your retirement income plan.
And a piece to that, too, is a sub point on that question, what services do you offer? What services can you offer?
Yes.
Like, I would ask the advisor you're meeting with what licenses they hold, because that, if they do not have all of the licenses that are out there to sell all of the investment products that are available, they don't have access to the full investment toolbox. And that can cause a problem when recommending investments because they can't actually access some of them.
Yeah, I'll talk very generically, but this is a challenge that we ran into in one geographic area where we have worked in the past, where there was not a Gen Wealth advisor. There was someone who had a limited, you know, amount of licenses. They didn't have all the licenses that our advisors hold. And the comparison in what they were doing to what we were doing is, we used to talk about, if the only tool you have in your toolbox is a hammer, then everything you see looks like a nail. And, you know, it might be anything but a nail, but it's going to look like a nail because that's the only tool you have based on those licenses. So we're not saying that any one product is good or bad. They're not. But you need to have an advisor who has the licenses to be able to be flexible so that if you need a screwdriver instead of a hammer, they can provide that to you.
Yeah. Our second question, Michael, that we would certainly encourage you to ask as you meet with a financial advisor and trying to interview them and determine if they're someone that you want to work with, is, are you a fiduciary? Now, that word gets thrown around a lot in the financial services industry, but let's talk a little bit about what that means, Janet.
Yeah, it means that as fiduciaries, we are required to recommend what is in your best interest. So in our minds, that is one of the primary reasons that we are planning based, because there's a bazillion different investments that we could choose and say, here, do this. But how do we know that that's in your best interest if we're not focused on putting a plan together and having a why behind that investment?
Yeah. And you think about how that plays out, because when I hear you describe what a fiduciary is, my response, and maybe Michael's is, and maybe people listening is, why wouldn't everybody be? Why wouldn't all financial advisors be a fiduciary? But the base level requirement is a suitability requirement.
Right.
It's just that the investment that they are recommending is suitable to you. And so there is a checklist. There is a process you have to go through, but being a fiduciary is next level.
It absolutely is. And it's relative to the licenses that they have.
That's
it
true.
Circles back to that question again. And another question, I think, Michael, that you would want to understand is, how often are you going to meet? And for our clients, there are times when we're meeting at least once a year. Sometimes there's not a need to meet physically in person, and we can do that electronically. But with many of our clients, we are meeting annually, and with others, they're at a different stage or they have different needs investment-wise and don't need to do that every single year. But if that's the stage where you are and that's important to you, then you need to know what that's going to look like in that relationship.
Study after study shows that the number one reason clients leave their advisor is because of a lack of communication. Mm-hmm. You need to know, how often are you going to be in contact with that advisor? And we talk about the annual review process here at GenWealth, but we also are obviously available for any discussion or meeting past that. You know, we've had clients come in to us, and we've seen that in action, that they have actually left their advisor and come to GenWealth partially because they haven't heard from their advisor in years. So you don't want to get into that. And that can revolve around sometimes because the advisor has potentially, sometimes put them into an investment product that doesn't require ongoing management, that doesn't require that regulatory component or compliance component of meeting on a regular basis. We build plans here, and those plans are actively managed and updated. and the investment strategy reviewed on an annual basis. So I think, Michael, when you're looking for an advisor, you're going to want one that has, and this really falls back to the relationship versus the transaction. You don't want to go to an advisor that is just going to sell you something and really never talk to you again. Mm-hmm. It needs to be relationship based.
Scott, I think one more really important one is to ask the advisor, what happens if you're not here? Now, that could be a short-term question, like on a vacation, or what happens if something happens to you? And here at GenWealth, we are team delivered. And so, in fact, right now, we have a team member who is the team member themselves are not in the hospital as a patient, but they have a family member in the hospital. And so they're gone and handling family things as they should be, because that is the priority right now. But that means that the rest of the team is stepping in and handling all of the client needs, whatever that might be at this point. So there's not a gap from the client's perspective. Everything is still being handled, and it is just critical. We see a lot in our industry. We see a lot of what are called one-man shops, and that's fine, except for when it's not. And so you just need to know that there's a plan in place.
Final question for us from Michael would be to ask, how much do you charge? Fees matter, but you also have to balance that on value. What are you going to receive for those fees? You know, you think about the three ways that we get paid here at GenWealth. There is the financial planning fee, which can be separate from the investment management. We want to work through the planning process first, and then the investments on that side, managing the investments, which is really pretty common across the financial services industry, that it would fall into one of two ways you get paid, which is really determined by the type of account you have. You are either going to be placed into a brokerage account or an advisory account. And at GenWealth, many of our clients have both. So they're not inherently good or bad. You shouldn't go one way or the other. It depends on your investment goal. If you're in a brokerage account, you're going to pay a commission upon the time of the trade upfront and not ongoing. And that may be useful in a buy and hold strategy. If you're going to buy something that's going to be held for a long period of time, and you're not going to have any active ongoing change in that, it can be more cost effective to pay upfront and then not ongoing. But if there is going to be active management, you're going to be changing investments on a relatively frequent basis, most likely you would be placed into an advisory account, in which there is, think of it as a wrap fee, as a percentage of the account value that is charged for the management of that. And then there is no commission upon the trade of those investments. So that's basically how, across the board, the financial services industry is structured, Janet. But those fees matter. But again, I highlight the value matters more.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very relevant.
So, Michael, thanks for that question. I would also say, when you ask what to watch out for, certainly if you step into that first meeting with an advisor and they're trying to sell you an investment product before learning about you, I always encourage people to get up and head the other direction. They have to learn about you, and they should be looking at an overall plan for your financial goals. Our final question of the show today is from Dustin via text message. Small business owner, I've maxed out all my tax-advantaged accounts, have no debt, and plenty of savings. Someone is recommending I invest in a VUL for additional tax-free growth benefits. Is this a smart play? Dustin, thanks for the question. A VUL is an acronym for Variable Universal Life. So this is an insurance product. It is a type of permanent life insurance policy that does build cash value, and it is invested in sub-accounts that are tied to market performance. So it's very much like mutual funds underneath this. So it can be very volatile. It can have some growth components. It can also go down in value. But a VUL can lose that cash value. That's important to know, yeah, Dustin, when you're thinking about this. And if it is too low, your premiums could actually increase. So that's a downside to think about. And for clarity, the growth is tax deferred, not tax free. So it is much like an IRA or a tax-deferred annuity. You're going to be able to not have to pay taxes along the way, but you will be taxed when the money comes out. Now, generally, I think, Janet, to set this up from our perspective, is Dustin, we don't believe permanent life insurance should be used as an investment.
Yeah, and I realize that, you know, we've believed this, frankly, for decades. Those of us who are founders of the firm, this has been one of the fundamental foundations on this is a line that we draw in the sand at GenWealth, because we've run the numbers so many times, and there are not situations that I can go, you know what, I'm telling you, an insurance product is a great investment. An insurance product is built to be an insurance product, and an investment product is built to be an investment product. And I realize that those lines have been blurred. But Scott, imagine for just a moment if somebody said, hey, I'm going to pay extra on my car insurance so I can invest.
Right.
Like, that sounds like the goofiest thing, but somehow we made it okay in life insurance. It's still an insurance product, and they've designed it in such a way that there are investment opportunities built in there. But I am just firmly in the camp of insurance should be for the purpose of insurance, and investment should be for the purpose of investments. And when you begin to look at, Dustin, we don't have an age for you, so I'm kind of flying blind on this, but I'll go with if you're younger and if you're older. If you're younger, you're at a point where, you know, you probably need to have some term life insurance in place, and that is the least expensive way to get life insurance. It's going to be infinitely cheaper than what a variable universal life policy would be. Separate in your mind, life insurance is for life insurance, and then use the rest of that money. It's the old buy term and invest the rest. So buy term, invest the rest of that in whatever it is that you need to be doing investment-wise. But in this case, though, when you say that you've maxed out your tax-advantaged accounts and have no debt, I'm going to assume that you're older, and so you may not even need life insurance. You may be at a point where you are self-insured, and so then we're just looking at, and I feel that's more of your situation, we're just looking at where do you go for investments. And frankly, there are other products that can provide you some tax advantages. I'll let Scott cover that in just a moment. But you can also just go with non-qualified investments, meaning they don't qualify for any special tax treatment. But the opportunity that that's going to give you, Dustin, is flexibility, just complete flexibility that if you go, hey, we decided we wanted to go to Hawaii. Well, guess what? You can pull money from that. There's no penalties. You do have to look at capital gains taxes, but that's less expensive than ordinary income. It's something definitely to consider.
Yeah. Paying capital gains taxes is not the worst thing in the world.
No, it's not.
If you're looking for tax deferred growth, there are annuities that you could look at, and annuities are not for everybody. They're complex products, and you certainly should consult your financial advisor before entering into an annuity contract. But you don't have the life insurance, the death benefit component of that. You're not paying a premium to receive a death benefit. There may be a death benefit on that.
Right.
But it is a way to get your money invested and defer the taxation on it. But they do come with surrender periods, and you need to know that. There's a long range of those as well, so you don't want to get in tied up into a super long surrender period. But again, reaching out to a financial advisor is the best way to discuss your options there, Dustin, because certainly you're in a great position to add to retirement savings in where you tell us in your question. You heard the bell for the final thoughts, and Janet, it is time to start with you.
I'm going to talk a little bit about Social Security because we had several questions on that. There are over 80 ways to claim Social Security, and the statement that you get basically has three: your early retirement age, your full retirement age, and your deferred age of 70. It is so critical to look at yours, and if you're married, your spouse's, if you're divorced or widowed, then that also comes into play in how you can claim Social Security benefits. So lots of choices out there, but I just think it's critical to sit down with somebody who has expertise in retirement income planning and can walk through what those choices are.
Yeah, we talked a lot about Social Security today. We talked about what to do if you're retiring next year, what to ask a financial advisor if you're going to potentially hire one, and what role certain investment products might play in your overall plan. Look, it's a complex thing, planning for retirement, investing, preparing to replace your paycheck. And so my final thought is get with an advisor and build a plan. Make sure that advisor builds a written plan with a target for you to reach your financial goals and doesn't just manage your investments only. Here at Gen Wealth, we do that. It's called the Gen Wealth Ready to Retire process. If you'd like to learn more, call us toll-free at 866-653-PLAN. That's 866-653-7526. And that is all the time we have for this week's Get Ready for the Future show. As always, we thank you for being with us, whether you're watching, whether you're listening. And if you have a question, please don't feel shy to reach out to us. We have a number you can call and leave a voicemail or text it, 501-381-5228, or send it to show@getreadyforthefuture.com.
Thank you for listening to the Get Ready for the Future show. If you enjoy hearing from the Gen Wealth team every week, make sure and subscribe to the podcast. And if you want to help us get the word out on building toward financial independence, share the podcast with your friends and family. The Gen Wealth financial team is available to you 24/7 at info@getreadyforthefuture.com or call our offices at 866-653-PLAN. That's 866-653-7526. You should personally consult a financial advisor before making any investment, and no strategy can assure success. Securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA/SIPC. Investment advice offered through Independent Advisor Alliance. Independent Advisor Alliance and Gen Wealth Financial Advisors are separate entities from LPL Financial.